Of course you can change IP addresses. Here's how it'll happen, and nothing will go wrong.
Powerful new technology. Cloud migration. Fully integrated system. HCX. And today we're delighted to announce.
Welcome to the HCX Majors Podcast, episode 17 for Tuesday, March 21st, 2023, live from Indiana. I'm Britton Johnson.
And from Colorado, I'm Andy Belts. And from Kansas City, Kansas, I'm Jason Marcusano.
Welcome, everybody. This is, again, number 17. We are deep into 2023. Lots of stuff happening in the world and in the world of technology, as always. Andy, Jason, how are you guys?
Doing well.
Andy, yeah. Has the snow abated in Colorado yet?
For the most part, yes. There's a lot of snow still in, I'd say, the shadows of trees and other buildings and things like that.
Oh, but, sure, yeah.
But otherwise, yeah, it's, it was 60 the other day, which felt like really good. And you can kind of just hear snow melting. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Up in the high country, though, still pretty prevalent. Was snowboarding on Saturday and pretty deep up there still. But otherwise, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. See, that's the thing. Whenever you talk about snowboarding, that's what makes me wish I lived in a place that had mountains. But
I just killed myself.
You know, I discovered many, many, many years ago, the first time I tried to go snowboarding. Snowboarding is one of those things, like, it's really not that different from working in IT. It's one of those things you just really have to want to do. You know, it's not something that you can just fall into and be really good at instantly. It's something that you kind of have to, you know, study and practice and fall and hurt yourself and then get up again. And yeah, you've got to mentally commit to it. Otherwise, it just doesn't work.
I got a concussion my very first day ever going, and I kept at it. So,
wow, you kept at it. So yes, I found my neighbor's retaining wall the first time I tried it as a kid, and I said, "No more for me."
Okay,
for the first time I went tried to go snowboarding. It was in Wisconsin, and I overdid it on the outer gear. It was like really cold, so I had like 6 layers on. So about 10 minutes into it, I was completely overheated and nearly passed out because I just. Retaining way too much heat, but yeah, you know, again, then that's another thing where it's like IT, you got to keep things cool, you know,
in multiple ways.
Yeah, everything relates back to technology in one way or another. That's my philosophy in life so far.
Yeah.
All right, let's jump into this quickly here because I want to run through this. I think we have a good amount of stuff to talk through today. We're continuing our Britain is Hunting Bloggers series, and anybody who's posting blogs on HCX, I'm hunting them down, and we're going to start asking them questions. So this is our second go at this, and I want to welcome award-winning engineer, Mr. Tom Twyman. Welcome, sir.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Tom, give us a 30-second synopsis of who you are, what you do, and where you're at in the world.
Sure. Tom Twyman. I live in Richmond, Virginia, although I'm originally from Massachusetts. I've been in Virginia since 2000. I originally joined VMware in 2007, spent a couple years over at EMC as a vSpecialist, came back in 2014. I was dedicated as a core SE for most of that time. I joined the vSAN team in 2016. And in 2018, I joined the VMC team. So for the past 4 years, I've been on the VMware Cloud Solutions Architecture team, running pre-sales, and I support healthcare for the East Coast. So Maine through Florida, out through, you know, Mississippi and Ohio, right? Basically, if it's a hospital system on the eastern 30 of the United States, they're my customer.
Walk me through kind of like a little bit of this. You working with VMC customers and working through things, it seems like HCX comes up in that discussion quite a lot. Is that kind of how you first got pulled into some dealings with HCX and exposure to it?
Oh, yeah, of course. You know, HCX is a pretty slick piece of technology. All of the use cases around, well, not all, but many of the use cases around VMware Cloud are really focused on infrastructure, right? How can I produce infrastructure for my infrastructure, for my workloads? How can I scale my on-prem infrastructure into the cloud? And if I do that, how do I get stuff out there cleanly and easily and with minimal impact to either the workload or the operations? As I mentioned earlier, I happen to support healthcare. And, you know, if you look across our healthcare client base, we don't actually have a lot of customers using VMware Cloud, healthcare customers using VMware Cloud for production workloads yet. But almost every one of them is looking at it for or testing it for DR. And if there's one thing that's true about healthcare workloads is, you know, they, like many other platforms and workloads, there's a lot of hard-coded IP addresses. So the question of how do you recover a workload into the cloud with minimal or no changes to the workload, including its IP stack, is a really, really relevant discussion. So very early on, you know, we started talking to customers about, hey, if you want to use the cloud for disaster recovery and you don't want to have to make changes to the workload's configuration, well, HCX is a great way to look at, you know, how you might be able to extend some networking on-premise into the cloud, recover that workload with, you know, minimal interruption in service. And, you know, of course, not having to reconfigure your workload means faster RTO, right? Faster recovery times. So that's really how we came about it.
I think that's key, right, Tom? I mean, you hit the nail on the head in terms of IPs can be hard-coded in applications. And it's funny, during my stint of doing disaster recovery in the late 2000s, I'd always have this kind of knockout, drag-out battle with the networking team who didn't want to extend layer two. And they're like, oh, the application, it should be using DNS, and it should be doing this, should be doing that. And so we should just be able to change the IP address and everything should be fine. I'm like, really? You really want to bet your career on it when there's a failure? And you're in the heat of the moment trying to bring everything up, because in my experience, that's often should and is are two different things, right? Well,
and why don't you go talk to the people who are doing app dev? If you've got a SQL box and you've got applications that talk to a specific, you know, make calls to a specific SQL query.
That's a lot to ask that your entire app team has not put an IP address somewhere that they shouldn't have.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly right.
Yeah. And invariably in a disaster recovery, that is when you find those things. Well, you know, the bad apples always turn up when you least expect them or least want them to.
Absolutely. Yeah,
and what I, you know, part of my pitch to customers, right? I mean, this question comes up on almost every single discussion that I have with customers in healthcare. You know, how do you accommodate, can we change IP addresses? What if I have to keep the IP addresses? And what I tell them is, you know, HCX is a part of a very, very rich toolkit that allows us to configure your recovery the way you want, right? And you want to keep IP addresses? Great. We've got at least two options. HCX is one of them. The other one, of course, being to recreate networking in the cloud. And there's a whole bunch of decisions that have to go along with that. Or if you want to change IP addresses, awesome. We've got tools that can help you do that as well.
On that point, kind of where do you see, I guess, how do customers receive that kind of, basically what you just said, what's kind of the reception? Do they appreciate the flexibility of those things, or do they tend to just want to focus on one side of that?
Well, I think the first reaction is always disappointment, right? Everyone wants the magic button that says, of course you can change IP addresses. Here's how it'll happen, and nothing will go wrong, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's what the first reaction is. And then after you've gently pointed out to them, you know, there's HCX looks like magic, but we can't actually fix problems in your application. You still have to make the hard decisions for what IP addresses are going to be available where, how are you going to handle routing, And if you're going to stretch the network, how are you going to handle, you know, gateway access, and how are you going to handle routing in the cloud, and who's going to be responsible for making the BGP configurations when you have to egress that VLAN into the cloud and have it be routable over there, right? There's that, you know, HCX does a lot of slick things, but it does not remove from the customer the responsibility for having to make decisions. And, you know, once they get past that, oh yeah, there's no actual magic here, then I think they really appreciate the fact that there is flexibility. And after that, I actually see customers falling in about 50-50. 50% of them are like, hell no, we're not going to stretch networks. I don't want to deal with that. There's too much complexity. We've got too many things that could go wrong. Things on-prem are already a mess. I don't want to introduce that confusion. So we're just going to, you know, we're going to do NATed gateways in the cloud or something like that, right? And recreate things. And the other 50% are like, oh, thank God we can stretch networks. Yes, let's just do that. And then you show them how easy. Yeah, then you show them how easy it is. And they're like, holy crap.
Yeah. Well, that requires a greater level of cooperation of the teams, right? I mean, especially with DR, right? Because all the silos want to operate in the way they've continued to operate. But with DR, your networking, your storage, your compute infrastructure, your security teams all have to come together and get on board with the fact that the business needs to continue if there's an event, right? And so, you know, if you got somebody saying, well, this is how I've always done it, I can't change. Well, does that satisfy the needs of the business to continue when there's an event? IT downsizes more and more, that cooperation is going to have to only increase to be efficient.
Yep. And yeah. And then I think our automation ability to, you know, create things based on things that we know already about an environment, I think our capabilities as a vendor need to shift in that direction too, where we can help customers backfill some of these things where manual processes can get replaced by some sort of an automation task. Because like one of the main like consulting projects I did prior to joining VMware was a DR scenario trying to build out an NSX network in a cloud service. And they approached me and they're just like, hey, we've got all of these firewall rules from this other firewall vendor that are running the production application. How do we replicate those and make them appear in NSX in the cloud? First of all, you can't.
but that ties back beautifully into HCX. I mean, that automation, that's something that HCX excels at, right? I mean, think about what it takes to manually do layer 2 extension in NSX without HCX. You got to deploy the edges. You got to tie them into the right switches. You got to IP address them properly. I mean, there's a lot of manual steps that in HCX, it really becomes define a network profile, define a compute profile, now right-click deploy. And we handle all those little nagging details in a streamlined process. And then we keep it healthy too, right? It's not just about day zero, day one, standing up that network extension, but HCX does a beautiful job of monitoring itself and making sure that, hey, if somebody changes something, we'll catch that and we'll correct it for you.
Tom, in your blog post, you refer to this document that you wrote out. Is this, so the blog itself is almost describing the document.
This was the brainchild of myself and one of the Datrium SEs that came over. And he's no longer here, Eskander. He's actually now with Google, but spring of 2021, I think, we actually wrote it. But we finally got it published in, I want to say, 2021. It was live for most of that summer. And then we had to take it down because the behavior of VMware Cloud on AWS and which routes we choose to publish over which interfaces, we didn't do any of the testing for Direct Connect. So we did all our testing with VPNs. And as you might expect, we had a whole bunch of customers who took the document, went ahead and tried to execute some of the things that were recommended in the document, but they had Direct Connect connections or they had Transit Gateway connections. And the behavior of VMware Cloud and changes pretty dramatically when it comes to what segments do we choose to publish where and when, right? So we had to take it down. I had to rewrite the whole thing to accommodate those scenarios last spring and finally got it republished last summer. And yeah, and then I just happened to write a quick blog article about it in December saying, hey, I wrote this thing, but I actually wrote it a while ago.
Well, I think that's good because, like, you know, I think it shows kind of, yeah, at least the level of effort that goes into the things that VMware publishes. We don't just willy-nilly publish stuff. And yeah, like, as with most technology things, kind of what you find in the blogosphere, even on the VMware blogosphere, we try to strive for a fairly high level of accuracy on these things because, yeah, we don't want customers taking them as gospel and doing things and then all of a sudden having a terrible experience with it.
Yeah, and you know the major sticking point was mobility optimized networking, right? So if you've got a VPN into VMware Cloud on AWS, and you enable mobility optimized networking, not so much of a problem, right? The challenge is because we will re-advertise those MON enabled networks back out over the VPN. So if you establish a new VPN, you can see those networks, and that means everything works the way you think it would. And even if you had a failure and the VPN changed, well, you can still access other networks locally in the cloud. The problem is when you use a direct connect, we forcibly do not advertise any of those MON-enabled networks, which means, of course, in an outage, if you intend to get access over a direct connect or transit gateway from Amazon or something like that, in order for those stretch networks to become available, you have to unstretch them. And apparently, unstretching a MON-enabled network forcibly when the source side is not available causes all kinds of problems. So the guidance became, if you're using HCX for disaster recovery, do not enable mobility optimized networks on the stretched networks that are being used for disaster recovery. If you have other networks that you want to enable it on, great, but don't do it for disaster recovery because the recovery process is really problematic and actually requires tickets to support.
Is that just into a VMC environment specifically?
Well, all I cover, Britain, is VMware Cloud and AWS. So I don't know if the behavior is different on AVS or GCP.
But that logically makes sense, right? Because in a DR scenario, you're not partially running in a state where you've got a multi VLAN or multi subnet application being pulled across, 80 milliseconds of latency. In a DR scenario, everything's running continuously on prem. So why would you need MON unless you're doing partial failover? If your DR scenario is partial failover, then maybe a use case for MON. But if it's a total failover scenario, no, don't check the box.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry, Andy. At the time, testing was, you know, if I lose my source site, can a VM running on a MON-enabled stretch network in VMware Cloud still access a VM on another local segment? And that all still works great, right? But the problem is what lots of our larger customers are putting security appliances in the cloud or in a VM and an Amazon VPC, and they get access to them over a transit gateway or something like that. And that's where all the problems really show up, right? Is I now have to move a whole bunch of things into the cloud, things that are not accommodated by VMware Cloud DR. Like I've got a couple of highly available Palo Alto devices sitting in a VPC somewhere in Amazon. How do I route my traffic correctly through those for inspection and security? Well, that becomes really problematic when you have mobility optimized networking enabled on that segment. Sorry, Andy, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Yeah, no worries. It actually kind of further kind of develops my point I was going to make is just, so earlier this year, I was doing some studying for CERT. And in that, disaster recovery really, I guess, for lack of better words, today looks different, I think, than it did. It doesn't look like tornado or tsunami, something like what I kind of probably 10 years ago would have associated with, or burning building. I think really what I grabbed was it looks like ransomware, you know, a lot of times today. And I think what we talked about earlier with people in process, you kind of almost don't have the luxury of being like, you know, this, the weather looks like it's going to be bad next Thursday. Let's hopefully all be friends by then. And we'll work out a time when we're going to trigger this DR event, right? You know, ransomware kind of, I don't think anyone's planned for the day and time when that's going to happen, right? And so to your point of all of these little, it's less about the technology at that point, the different options in HCX certainly may, and BCDR may all come up, but I think it's almost, you have to kind of think about it differently in some regards of let's plan for this to work without a whole lot of intervention, right? And let's make sure that it's going to actually, so I think your blog post really is, it talked about five different scenarios, and I think all of those are, you kind of almost have to think about some of those things differently, right? One of them was talking about the internet going out. Certainly that could happen and likely will at some point in your you know, team or company's technology lifecycle. But complete outage of the source site, it almost equates to the ransomware type of thing. And I don't mean to take us down a rabbit hole, but I've started, I guess myself, started to think about DR differently than I did 5 years ago.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. You know, the I would say, and again, because I cover healthcare, I would say ransomware is forefront, right? It's top of mind for every hospital that I talk to.
Yep.
And you know, it can still be a partial outage, right? You can still have a partial outage, but I don't think that's what most people experience, right? The problem is by the time they realize they've been bitten by ransomware, there's a healthy chunk, if not the majority, of their infrastructure is no longer available. So it represents a complete outage of the source site, right? And that, you know, I like to use, you know, the example of, oh, a backhoe cuts through your power line, because that's a fairly mundane example that has happened, right? Or a backhoe cuts through your water main and floods your data center. I also have customers where that has happened. But I think you're right, Andy, that more and more and more it's becoming, you know, malicious intent and malicious behavior that is, that's top of mind for a lot of these companies.
Yeah, and you don't know when that's happening. I guess with the some of those other things, you know, you might be able to say like, hey, don't do construction here. And we at least can see that vehicle coming off of a trailer or something to start digging, and someone can wave their hands and say time out. But yeah, ransomware is a little bit more unknown when it strikes. So, or a lot more, I should say.
Yeah.
So it's good. I mean, it's a good topic of conversation to, I mean, think about all of those things. You all work, I think, directly with the customers for these sorts of things more than I do. So this is interesting for me to just hear it from you and just hear how customers are thinking about that sort of a thing. So
Tom, in the rest of the guide, you know, we talk about this, you know, scenario for specific workload or application. Like when we're dealing with this, say from a healthcare standpoint, are you enabling in the guide the ability for the customer to stand up, you know, a off-site copy of a critical application and be able to fail over to it on demand? Or is this sort of a pilot light type thing where they can, you know, flip over to it with like a VCDR?
Right. This is all predicated that the customer is using VMware Cloud Disaster Recovery.
Okay.
And if you use VCDR, well, even if you haven't, that's fine, right? VCDR kind of operates a lot like site recovery in that there's this concept of protection groups. A protection group is a group of virtual machines that share a replication schedule, and it can, you know, it can be one VM or hundreds of VMs. And then for every Then there are DR plans, right, or recovery plans. And a recovery plan, just like in site recovery, is an orchestrated set of steps that will gracefully bring online the virtual machines in one or more of the protection groups. So, to answer your question directly, Britton, you could have a recovery plan that recovers 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 virtual machines for a specific application, just like you could in site recovery. So when we talk about failing over, you know, a specific application or workload, the premise is you have a recovery plan in VCDR that is only recovering one protection group, and there's only, you know, the requisite virtual machines in that protection group to cover that app. And, you know, the idea is that there'd be one or more networks that those VMs are connected to on premise, but you just have to recover that one application. And the implication there is that it only is going to impact some of the networks that are being stretched, not necessarily all. Does that answer your question? That was a long answer. Does that answer your question?
No, it's good. I mean, this is why, you know, we try to go for the details here. So I think it's good. And I've had limited exposure to VCDR in my account base. You know, we're kind of just starting to get some interest on that. So I haven't seen it. Haven't seen it firsthand, kind of how you guys talk through those scenarios. So that's helpful to kind of understand that. And now all of a sudden I'm making the connection in my brain as to why you were working with the Datrium guy. That's because this was the reason we bought Datrium, was for the VCDR product. So yeah, I'm caught up now, you know. So in that respect of things, so that since this is kind of predicated on VCDR, are there ways that customers can kind of pre-cover themselves? Is there kind of prerequisite things that somebody can turn on for getting into this type of a preparation for hooking up to something where they like HDX with VCDR? Is there stuff that they can kind of do to make their lives easier once they decide to go down the path of using, you know, VCDR and things like that? Or is it kind of just plug it in and go?
Well, you know, I think when it comes, what I have found, talking to customers about our cloud portfolio over the past 4 years, it doesn't really matter if it's a DR use case or if it's a production use case. What I have found by and large is if they have not thought through the implications of what it means to have a secure enclave of their workloads running in somebody else's data center, all bets are off, right? I mean, first and foremost, you got to stretch your IP scheme to another location, right? You've got to have subnets available. Not everything is going to be stretched, right? I mean, VMware Cloud on AWS, you've got a vCenter. You have to be able to communicate with that vCenter, which means it needs to live on a routable, non-conflicting, non-overlapping IP segment. And there's always firewalls in the way, right? And the great thing about the cloud, there's always two firewalls in the way, the one on premise and the one in the cloud, because of course VMware Cloud on AWS comes with its own firewall. So If you haven't thought through those things, then, you know, that's kind of the bare minimum starting point. I actually wrote another article on my blog recently, which is, you know, I titled, "Hey Mom, I Built a Thing." Which, you know, kind of speaks to this, you know, part of this issue. A couple of years ago, I actually was asked to speak to a bunch of Amazon sellers, employees of AWS, and, you know, they wanted to know, why does it take so long? Why does your stuff take so long? Why is the networking so hard? And I said, well, I'm going to make a couple of assumptions, and you tell me if I'm right or wrong. I said, I'm assuming that when you have customers starting on AWS native, generally they start in the free tier. Is that right? Yeah. Well, yes. I said, okay. Well, and generally speaking, when they're starting building things in AWS, they're probably building things new, right? Well, yeah. what happens when they try to take that new thing and they try to put it into production on their production network? Oh, well, now we got to think about firewall rules and we got to think about networking. And I said, right. So what we're doing with VMware Cloud on AWS is we're just taking that whole motion and we're dragging it to the front of the process, right? Our premise begins, you are going to connect this to your secure, hardened, robust enterprise data center. And guess what that means? That means you need a managed, secure infrastructure that the operations team is capable of operating. And you need sign off from the governance and security teams. And you need an IP scheme that can be stretched into the cloud and accommodate workloads living there. And you have to think through what prefix filtering means when you suddenly move a production segment into the cloud and it wasn't there before, right? So, you know, it's a really long answer, Britton. I'm sorry.
No, it's good. It's good. You know, it's all good.
You ask me, you know, what can customers do to prepare? You know, I don't know if there's a shortcut. I really don't, right? There's this is an infrastructure use case. And the premise is we're going to extend your infrastructure to another data center that happens to be owned by somebody else. And so you've got to start thinking about it, right? You've got to have people who are ready to participate and jump in.
No, I think, quite honestly, Tom, I think that was probably one of the most beautiful juxtapositions of AWS versus VMC on AWS that I've ever heard. So if I could give you...
Yes, two mentalities colliding.
Yeah, it really is. Right? I think that is really, really, really crucial where so many customers across all verticals and all businesses and all everything, we get so used to building things and architecting things in the way we've always done it. And then vendors come along and they say, hey, look at this new shiny thing. And this new shiny thing does this, 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 and that. And, you know, it'll make your life, you know, 12 times better than what it is now. And there's always a little bit of a gap in between what a customer perceives things as and the new shiny thing. And that's where, you know, SEs like, you know, myself and Jason and you, Tom, and, you know, Andy, I know you do this to lesser to a customer's extent, but somewhat, like, that's where we kind of come in to try to, like, help bridge those gaps of communication of where the work is involved. Because invariably, there is always going to be some level of work involved to get to the thing. And now, I think the way VMware tries to do that, like you said it right at the outset, Tom, we're dragging that process right to the head of the line, because ultimately, especially for healthcare customers, the way I have talked to them all the time, they're just paramount and paranoid about security and things and wanting things to be stable and secure. Stable and secure comes before anything else.
Yeah, because there's a patient on a table at the other end of whatever you're doing, right? There's literally a life on the other end of it. Yeah.
And that's where even I see like a really, really slow or no at all uptake for things like overlay networks inside of NSX. Don't want to deal with it if they don't have to. And, you know, so it's to that end of like we're trying to take this process and make it as simple as possible. But, mm-hmm. you know, I occasionally will get pulled into customer conversations where we're like, you know, they want to refactor an application and move it to some cloud native thing. And a lot of customers view the foot in the door of moving to VMC and AWS as kind of the first step into moving out of a VMware vSphere infrastructure into a native cloud infrastructure that somehow sure. they're just going to magically make that leap from, you know, VMware infrastructure into Amazon native cloud infrastructure. And still, it's just like, you guys don't really realize just how much of a ginormous leap that still is. I'm sure Amazon's working on making it better, but that's going to be a while before, you know, Andy Jassy and the team figure that out.
I like the way you've got it on your blog. I was skimming through the, hey mom, I built the thing, and it's a picture of a Jeep, right? Clean in a parking lot. Next frame is, oh, by the way, now we're going through the mud and it's up to the top of the wheels and we're trying to get to the top of that hill. But the reality is, yeah, there's a ton of stuff. So that you got to think about. So it's a good visual. I like that.
There was a caption on that at one point. That was a
talking about confidence.
Yes, that's the confidence quote that confidence, you must have seen.
Yeah, yeah, so confidence is what you have before you understand the situation.
Yeah. Before you realize you don't know what you don't know.
That's right. Yeah. 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 And that's, I would say that has been the lesson I have had to learn over and over and over. Not that I've had to learn it, but I've watched customers have to learn it over and over and over over the past 4 years.
Yeah. Well, so coming from the former customer side of things, I get it, right? It's difficult being the implementer. And, you know, and I see what the hardest transition that I see a lot of customers going through these days is the guys who started as administrators and engineers and have now graduated up to the architect level, and they're having a hard time designing things and then letting somebody else build it. And like that whole like idea of creating being the architect and building the blueprint for the house, like the architect isn't there hammering nails into the boards when they're building the house. And the IT architects that I know, almost all of them, you know, with really rare exception, have a hands-off approach when it comes to building things. And I think we as an industry need to figure out a better way to enable our, you know, administrators and engineers to make that career pivot and transition into full design mode, because I think once we get there, then we'll actually have a lot more fruitful conversations about how these things work, because it's going to be somebody who knows how to build it, but isn't actually the one doing it, and can still come through and say, okay, these are the things to look out for as you're building this thing. And that's, you know, another area that I think the IT sector as a career path, we've got to do a little bit better job holistically preparing people to make that transition. And I think, you know, I can try to help my customers who are in that space make that transition, but it's difficult. No, it's not easy conversations to have.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. The career trajectory for folks in IT is, you know, like so many things, it's all about having to learn more and more and more and more. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when it comes to cloud architecture, you know, I still don't have any certifications from Amazon. You know, and what I've found is working in the cloud unit for VMware, there's like, I mean, we finally have a VCP for VMware Cloud, but it's like, you know, I need to know these five things about NSX really, really well, but I don't care about the rest of it. And I need to know these three things about Amazon Direct Connect really, really, but I don't care about the rest of it. Right? Like, I haven't pursued a certification because what I've seen is my skill set has broadened. Some of it has become less deep. I don't know if there's a verb for becoming less deep. Like, there's deepened. Shallowed. Become more shallow, right? But it's like, there's definitely, I'd say on average, my skill set has gotten broader and deeper in a lot of areas, but it's definitely like, I couldn't, you know, my first certifications were in Microsoft. I couldn't possibly tell you the five domain controller roles these days, like, or why they're even important, right? I mean, those were my first certifications.
Hey, well, when it comes to architecture, it's less about, do you know that command with that switch to do that specific thing versus do you understand why you need to do it, and where to go find that command if you actually need to do it. I mean, let's go back to the conversation earlier, right? We got to break the silos down for the organizations to work together to make, you know, DR happen, or just make IT happen. And so that's going to require, you know, certain people being deep in certain things, but being broad in others so that the teams can communicate together to actually make a thing happen, make that VM come up at the DR site, make it actually talk out, make it through all those firewalls, make it egress out to the internet, right? And everybody needs to have some understanding of what it all takes to make that happen. Yes, certain people will be detailed to go make that firewall change, or another person will be detailed to make that replication happen. But ultimately, we all got to speak the language together to get the DR, to get the app up.
Yeah.
Save the life on the table.
All right, guys, we're kind of at the top of the hour here, so I'm going to land this plane here. Any final thoughts, Tom, Andy, Jason?
good conversation. It was absolutely. I appreciate you coming on. It's good, good chatting. I learned some new stuff, so thank you.
And I know somebody to bug now for VCDR questions.
Hey, listen, anytime. And I really appreciate it. I'd love to come back and talk about anything. Really appreciate you guys inviting me. And we spent less time on the actual article than I thought we would. So
that's part of why I wanted to do this with some of these folks that I've seen writing these blogs, is I realize this is kind of a jumping off point to lots of other larger discussions. So all good. So again, thanks again for the time.
Thank you all.
Thanks for listening to the HCX Majors podcast. Thanks to Tom, Andy, and Jason. If you're enjoying the show, please rate us on your podcast app of choice, and please share it so others can find us. We'll be back soon with an update from the HCX product team. See you all then. Thanks again.